Monday, October 26th. My name is Rick Bradley. I'm in Ada, Oklahoma, with Harry the Cat Brekeen. Harry, tell me where you got your nickname.
Well, that was put on me by Roy Stockton of the Post Dispatch in St. Louis. I was a real good fielder doing fielding bunts and things, and everybody called me the Cat on the club when fielding, and then when the spring training game started, we started playing the exhibition games. Why, Roy Stockton, every write-up, he'd say the Cat did so-and-so during the game, and that's where it come on to me.
Did your nickname have anything to do with Harvey Haddix getting his nickname?
Well, it probably does, because Harvey was a great fielder, and he was playing in Columbus when I was with the Cardinals, and they come up with the Kitten. So I think that's they just started to call him the Kitten and started the Cat.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, what was your earliest awakening when did you know that baseball was something that you wanted to do for a career?
Well, actually, when I was playing American Legion ball here in Ada,
mm-hmm.
I always wanted to play baseball, and so I was playing American Legion ball, and so the scouts started coming around, and I was signed by the Galveston, the Buccaneers, and signed up with them, and started out with them. From then on, I just kept playing the minor leagues and getting a little better every year. So finally, till I got to where I was able to make the Cardinal Club. Back then, you only had 16 clubs, and you had lots of pitching in the three AAAs. And every AAA club had a big league pitching staff, so it was kind of hard to make the Cardinal staff. You kind of had to wait till someone kind of wore out and got over the hill before they would trade him off and let him bring you up.
Who was the first scout that approached you, and who was the scout that eventually signed you?
Well, I was signed here at Ada to Galveston, and I think Homer Blankenship, who I think he played some of the White Sox, and then Jack Mealy was the manager of Galveston, and so he got a contract through Mealy for me to try out with that club.
Mm-hmm. And he was the first guy who approached you, and the one who also signed you.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. What did your family think about you making baseball as a career?
Well, way back then, they didn't think too much of it. They thought if I wanted to play baseball, it's just great. Go ahead and try it. You know, if you did, you'd come back home and do something else.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Well, I'm looking at your minor league record here. And you started off in Galveston and then Greenville, Galveston again, Bartlesville, Portsmouth, Houston, and Columbus. I just have a couple of questions about that. If there's any interesting things you remember about that, either a manager or maybe a couple of interesting characters or maybe some of the guys that you played with who eventually made the majors too. Why don't you go ahead and tell me about that?
Well, yeah, actually, I played with Eddie Stanky at Portsmouth. We were both just young kids starting out, and I played with Eddie Stanky in room with him, and we had a fine ball club there in Portsmouth, and I think I won 20-21 in some odd games. And Eddie Dyer, who was over the farm system for the Cardinals, he sold two players to Boston and bought me from Portsmouth and put me on the Houston roster. And that's how come he wind up in Houston. Then I pitched 2 years there, and then I went to the had good years in Houston. Last year I had a real good year. I think I've got a record that stands for probably the all-time shutout innings in a row when this season ended. And after that, well, then the Cardinals, they take me up so I wouldn't be drafted and put me on their big league roster. And then that gave them three chances to opt you out 3 years to a AAA club before you was eligible for draft.
Oh, okay.
And so I went ahead and had good years in Columbus. The last year I had an outstanding year, and then course, the Cardinals, that was 42, and then the Cardinals won the pennant and World Series that year, and then they didn't bring me up until 43. That was my first year. I would be up to stay up right around May, you know, and then I'd go back to Columbus, and then I wound up going up in 43 and staying through 52 with them.
Mm-hmm. So when you were growing up, you were strictly a pitcher? You didn't play any other positions?
No, I only played at Portsmouth. I played outfield. I played outfield. One of our outfielders got hurt, but I took my regular turn pitching. Mm-hmm. I was a pretty good hitter, you know, and so they put me out in outfield. And I could throw well, and I had two or three assists out there when I was playing, throwing people out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll go ahead. You're gonna. Okay. Tell me about what you remember about your very first day with St. Louis in the major leagues, and how were rookies treated back then? I think it's different than they are now. I think back then it was more like you're coming up to take my job, and I don't think there was more animosity back then than there is today.
Well, now, back then, when you come up, you had to fight for your job because they only had so many pitchers they could keep up there, and some of the guys was good to you. I had, matter of fact, I was real fortunate. I had Curt Davis and I had Lon Mornicky on the club, and I talked with them about pitching, how to pitch and do this, that on the mound, and they were great to me, you know. But nowadays they just bring you up in the, you just sit on the bench and you learn up there instead of spending two or three years in AAA ball where you've got experience. They try to take a college boy up there and play in the big leagues, and there's very few can do that.
Mm-hmm. During the war years, where did the Cardinals have their spring training?
Well, we had Cairo, Illinois. We were in Cairo, Illinois, mm-hmm. and we had spring training there. And we didn't go to Florida or anything.
Mm-hmm. What about 1943? Now, you were in Columbus in 40, 41, and 42, and so finally 1943, you make the team on a full-time basis. Tell me about
well,
that.
Well, back in 43, when I went up, you was only playing about 16 to 18 ball games a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was only a spot starter the first year I relieved out of the bullpen. And then, after relieving, why maybe then I'd pitch the second game of doubleheader or something like that. I never got to get in too many night games, of which would be only the time I'd get in a night game if I'd relieve or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Just briefly, describe for me what type of pitcher you thought you were, and describe a little bit your pitching stance, maybe your pitching motion, and then other than I know that you threw a screwball. Tell me what other pitches you threw.
Well, actually, I've had four pitches I used. I had the fastball, curveball, and screwball, and changeup.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, my screwball I used on right-hand hitters mostly. Occasionally, I would throw it to a left-hand hitter, but not too often because the ball was breaking back into him, and I didn't use it too much, unless it was a waste pitch or something, and that's when I used it.
Just the last question that's in with this is, was there anybody that you saw maybe coming up through the minor leagues that you tried to copy, or was there everything that you did was on your own?
Well, I learned it on my own, mm-hmm. and I tried to follow through and square up real well where you could feel each way, and that way if you can feel through the middle real well, your shortstop and second base don't have to protect through the middle as much. Mm-hmm. And the pitchers that don't square up, they have a tough time feeling through the middle because they're going to either be off on the wrong side all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The ball through the middle bounces back over the rubber of the plate. It's tough to feel because you can't get back to handle it.
All through now, from 43 through 53, think back and tell me about one or two of the, who were the toughest guys for you to get out?
Well, actually, you rather to pitch, if you're pitching I think it's your brother to swing, pitch to the free swinger,
mm-hmm.
the guy that swings hard a lot, because you have a chance to fool him more than the guy that chokes up on the bat. He is a contact hitter, and he's going to make contact, and the only thing you can do then is you just have to try to keep him pecking the ball over the infield someplace and everything, where the big strong hitter, you can fool him a lot, but you just try to keep him, hold him to singles and get the little hitters out.
Mm-hmm, but there's no names that come to mind?
No, I had problems with all of them. It wasn't just one.
Well,
you know.
Looking at these numbers, I wouldn't say that was entirely true. But we talked a little bit about your pitching. What kind of hitter were you?
I got quite a few hits. I got my share of hitting. You know, a lot of times when you're pitching against a good, tough left-hander, Spahn or somebody like that, it's tough to hit, you know. Mm-hmm. But the right-hand hitters, I could make contact pretty good with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I got quite a few hits. I'd get 15 to around 20 hits a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty good where you're only in 30 games or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is pretty good. How about some of your roommates? Who'd you room with over there?
Well, my roommate was Murray Dixon, Marty Marion, Dale Garms, Johnny Leonard Pepper Martin.
Mm-hmm.
In 44, I moved to Pepper Martin, and he was the manager out of San Francisco and Sacramento, I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so they brought him in to, he could hit left-handers good, and they brought him in to play against left-handers, and he did a good job for us.
Mm-hmm. How about, there had to be somebody on the team that would have been considered flaky or a real character. Who would that have been?
Well, we had a pretty good group of players through there. I think Tommy Glaviano was kind of like that. He was a good little player, you know, but he was always doing some little something.
Mm-hmm.
But most back in the 40s, in there before he was on the club, our guys were just pretty good group of players that stuck strictly to baseball. You know, they didn't goof around too much. We mm-hmm. didn't have any of those problems. We didn't have to have anybody to in the clubhouse to lead the clubhouse, because we all went out there to play the game of baseball, and that's what you're supposed to. And all, mm-hmm. everybody was talking baseball. And nowadays they have to have a clubhouse leader or something, mm-hmm. which I don't think is quite necessary. You know.
Mm-hmm. There's I have a whole list of guys here. I must have about 40 written down. Let me throw five or six at you. Just want to throw some names, and then
yeah.
The first thing that pops in your head. First one I want to start off with is Joe Garagiola.
Joe Garagiola was, now it's witty, but he wasn't a screwball. He mm-hmm. was witty, because Joe Garagiola, when he was just a kid, I say kid, 19 or 20 years old, when he'd be sitting in the bullpen and wasn't in the ball game, he would be announcing the ball game. He'd sit down and announce the whole ball game, you know. Of course, at that time, I didn't know he'd ever become such a real good announcer as he is.
Mm-hmm.
But he was really a good kid. And but he wasn't flaky or anything like that. He was just he just did that for something he liked to do, you know.
Mm-hmm. How about Musial?
Musial was quiet. He went about his work, you know. He he would kid a little bit, but Stan was strictly business. You know, he was a great guy to play for. He never complained.
Mm-hmm.
Played every day, you know. And what he says is, so they don't call that third strike. Well, they can call the first two, but don't call the third strike, because he had a chance to hit it.
How about Jackie Robinson?
Jackie was truly the most exciting base runner I've ever saw when he was on base. You know, he could, the way to keep him from running is throw a base ahead of him and the mm-hmm. ball in front of him. He couldn't come down here. But he was great, you know, and he was a good competitor. He was a fine competitor, but he was, to me, he was the most exciting base runner that I saw in my career of baseball.
Mm-hmm. How about Ralph Kiner?
Ralph Kiner was a guy that could hit the ball as probably as far as anyone, and he hit the ball with a backspin on it. It just looked like a lazy fly ball, and it would just carry, going out of the park. He didn't hit sinkers. He hit under the ball, and it had a backspin like hitting fungos, outfields. His ball would carry and carry and carry, and if he got a hold of it, you forget about it.
Well, here's the last guy I'm going to ask you about. He's along the same lines. How about Ted Kluszewski?
Ted Kluszewski was a strong guy. He was a real good friend of mine. Ted and I, we went on a barnstorming one trip after baseball season, and he'd play about four or five innings, and he'd say, "Harry, why don't you play first base the rest of the game? Let me rest. My feet's getting tired, you know." But he was strong. I saw him. He was so strong. His arms big. I saw him, a guy hang himself at first base. He stuck his arm out to catch a ball, and the guy's chin went under it, and he just hung himself up there with his chin. But he was a really a nice fellow.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've got I have your career broken down year by year. I won't talk about every year, but I've got five or six of them picked out. Just want to talk about a couple things in each year. First one would be 1943. Tell me about the World Series.
Well, in the 43 World Series, I was sick. I just had a tooth pull, and had to pull the last series. And then I come down with the flu, and so the doctor said, "Well, he can't go to the World Series." And Southworth said, "Well, he will too, because I'll sit in the ambulance and get him and take him." So I went to New York, and I was in, I think, every game in New York. I'm not positive. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I stayed in the hotel room. I never got out of the hotel room, only went to the game and stayed there the whole time in New York. And then I come back in St. Louis, and I was in the ball game at home in that series, and I stayed, I guess, 4 or 5 days in old St. Louis until I got over my flu a little bit. But in that series, they had this pitching set up where I was relieved the whole series, not start any ball games. They had their starters like they do now. They probably pick three fellas to start in the series with off days travel. Right. It gives you an extra day in there. And so I relieved the whole series in the 43.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how about next year in 44? Lost to the Yankees in 43, but
yeah.
Tell me about playing the Browns and what the, you know, you...
The Browns had a club of older players, and they all had the good year together, like Dave Winfield this year, the super year he had. Well, they had guys who was having years or comparison with him, and they were tough. They had good pitching. So we went in, and I only pitched one game. I won it in there. I think I beat Jakuki in that ball game, and I think I evened the series up or something. I believe I did. They had a good pitching staff, and it was a all St. Louis series, because we were playing in the Browns Park. They owned the stadium, and the Cardinals rented from them. So it was a good series, and I was fortunate to get to pitch one game in it and win one there.
Mm-hmm. I tell you what, just real quick, tell me about the 43 Cardinal team and the 44. They both won 105 games out of 154 games. And just ran away with the National League both years. What made those two teams so good?
Well, actually, we had a good fielding club. We didn't give many runs away. And we won a lot of close ball games. And those 2 years, we didn't score a whole lot of runs. Mm-hmm. But we were able to score enough to win. But Southworth was managing the club, and he wanted to win every ball can he could, you know. And we just went on, and the pitchers who pitch good against certain clubs, they pitch a lot against certain clubs. I pitch a lot of clubs against clubs that if they had left-hand hitting or something, or that we might go into one place and pitch all left-handers nearly against them, which would cut their power down on the club.
You have anything? I was going to ask you, I asked the same question to Allie Reynolds yesterday about pitching, well, for you, 43 through 45, pitching during the war years. You know, supposedly there's a belief that the talent wasn't as good. And it's, for instance, it kept Hal Newhouser out of the Hall of Fame up until just recently. What do you think about that? A bunch of baloney? Or?
Well, I think it was, because I think the talent, you still had a lot of talent because you had all these leagues and you could bring up players. Then you didn't go on the disabled list. Like, it got more on disabled list, more being operated on 1 year than they might have in 10 years back then. And they had good players. They had players who could play good. And well, Lord, you just take the 46 series. You look there, probably five Hall of Famers on that 46, the Dodgers and the Cardinals. You got Musial, you got Slaughter, Ryan Shandies, Ted Williams, Bobby Doerr. They're some of our great all-time players, you know, back in that area, you know, in that. And they were good players. They can say what they want to about the war years, but they were some super players of playing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, just a last question about the Warriors. When I asked Allie Reynolds yesterday, how did he stayed out of the service because he was 4F?
Well, that's what I was.
Okay.
My draft board here didn't think I was 4F because I could play baseball, but they was always calling me up and sending me to examine me, and then they'd stick another 4F on me, you know. Mm-hmm. Because I had a bad back and a bad ankle, which I still have on it. And that's the way I stayed out of it.
Okay. Well, talk about 1946. First of all, Cardinals and the Dodgers play the entire season, and they wind up tied at the end of the year, and they have the first ever playoff for a pennant winner. Tell me about the playoff series.
Well, the playoff series was 2 out of 3, I believe is the way it was. Well, we won the first one in St. Louis, and then we went to Brooklyn, I believe. Murray Dixon, he was cruising along. He's pitching one football game, and it run into the last inning, and they got a rally started, and Southworth was going to pitch me the next day if they won the game. And so he brought me out of the bullpen, and I think I got out. I kind of believe I struck out Schultz and Stanky in that inning to when I think we got them out, they had the bases full or something like that. They got hot and hitting everything we throwed up there. But I think I struck out Schultz 3-2 on screwball and with the bases loaded. And I got Stanky on something. I don't know what it was.
Mm-hmm. It's okay. This puts you into the World Series, and this is pretty famous. First of all, it's St. Louis and Boston.
Yeah, well, that after we won the game to go represent the National League against Boston, Mr. Rickey was general manager of the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
So we were in the lounge or club car, and he come by me, and he stopped, and he said, "Well, you can beat the Red Sox." And he told me that, and I said, "Well, I sure hope so." And he said, "You can beat them." But see, I played for Mr. Rickey. I played for him. He was over the Cardinals for years and years when I was at Houston, and I was at Columbus, and when I went to Cardinals. He gave me more money, actually, to go back to pitch at Columbus than I was making the Cardinals last year.
Interesting. Now, this is, you won 3 games in that series.
Yeah.
And then, tell me about the 3 games that you won, and then I want to ask you about Enos Slaughter and Johnny Pesky.
Well, see, Howard Paulette opened the series, and he pitched a beautiful ball game, and a bad hop in the ninth inning cost him a tie game, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then he lost it the 10th with a home run by York. And then I pitched the second game, and I think I won it 3-0 or something. And then it run on. Then I pitched, I guess, the sixth game, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I won it 4-1.
Mm-hmm.
And then Murray's pitching the last game, and he's pitching a good game. I think it's 3-2 or something like that. Actually, when he run into problems in the seventh inning or eighth, then mm-hmm. I come in out of the bullpen, and I think I struck out Moses, and then I got another out. I had two outs with Dominic DiMaggio, and I run the count down to 3-2, and I got him screwball up and hit off the right center field fence, and that tied the game. And then we run into the ninth inning, and in the ninth inning, my Harry Walker hit and Slaughter on base.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then it was a hit and run or run and hit, whatever you want to call it, and Slaughter. Harry hit the ball left center, and then Slaughter, he just kept running, and the third baseman, coach was trying to hold him up, but Pesky got the ball out there, and he kind of hesitated and threw it to plate. He beat him. But Slaughter, he just didn't look at the third base coach. He was just going all the way.
Mm-hmm. He just wasn't going to stop. Now, this gives you 3 World Series in 4 years, and your World Series ERA is 0.83. Now, your all-time ERA is under 3, which is tremendous, but what was the difference? I mean, for anybody that's thrown over 30 innings in World Series history, your ERA is the best.
Yeah.
What was the difference between the World Series and just regular season? How are you so much better?
Well, I think that getting into a series, you're a little more up for it, you know, and you're maybe lucky that you have good stuff on those days when you start or you leave. And that goes a long ways. Now, in the starting for the complete year, if you can stay around 3, you've got a terrific earned run average. It's lively as the ball is, mm-hmm. because that ball, one pitch in this earned run average, jumps 1.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to, anytime you give up 5 or 6 runs, then you've got to pitch 2 or 3 really low-scored games to mm-hmm. ever bring your earned run back. It isn't like today. Today's player, if you can shut them out 6 or 7 runs, 6 or 7 innings, then they bring in the relief pitchers. Well, you're going to, most of the time, you're going to get a win.
Mm-hmm. So what was the mentality, Harry, when you played? It was what you started, you wanted to finish, or did management expect you to finish?
Well,
now they have these high-priced relievers and they don't expect them.
They've got that so overrated. If you look at your big league pitching as of today, you will find more two-pitch pitchers than a two-pitch pitcher is not going to pitch as many innings. He's mm-hmm. great for 3 or 4 innings, but the second or third time through the lineup, mm-hmm. it gets tougher to get the hitters out. That's the reason you see these pitchers pitch one in and out of the bullpen. Well, they come in and blow the ball from one inning, and they got you out, and you're in the clubhouse, and you haven't got but 3 guys to hit at it. So it's a lot of difference. And you don't pitch many complete games. They will, if you're pitching a 1-run game and they've got the last 5 outs, when they come to the ninth inning, they won't let you finish.
Mm-hmm.
We have pitchers up there. I think Maddox and guys like that can pitch 9 innings. I think he can pitch a lot more 9 innings than he does, because he is a great pitcher.
I think you were in one All-Star game. I think that was the following year, 47?
I was in on two All-Star games. I only pitched in one,
okay.
I think.
Tell me about both of those.
Well, the All-Star game, we played, it was played in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Warren Spahn and Sane and I pitched the ball game. I think we were the three pitchers. Spahn pitched the first three innings, and I pitched the second, and Sane pitched the last three.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave up a run, and Sane gave up a run, and I think we got beat 2-3 or 2-1 or something.
2-1
I have
down here. That was at Wrigley Field?
It was Wrigley Field, yeah.
There's a, as I was doing some research on your career, there's this one game that kind of sticks out. You wound up, I think, being the losing pitcher, but it was 1950. Pittsburgh won 12-11 in 10 innings, and it was where they intentionally walked Ralph Kiner with nobody on. Do you remember that game?
Yeah. Wind blowing a gale out, and that little, it used to be Greenberg Garden. You probably never heard of it.
Hank Greenberg, yeah.
Yeah, they had a garden built in there. And
this is Forbes Field.
Yeah. And I lost that ball game. Bell, Gus Bell, he hit a ball to right field, and Slaughter jumped up after it, missed it, and we lost the ball game.
Mm-hmm.
On it, I did. Actually, I don't know what my record be against Kiner. I'd like to know, but I had just about as good a chance getting him out as I did Bell. You know, Bell hit left-handers pretty good, you know.
But I was just kind of curious that they would walk. I mean, Kiner was a great home run hitter. But intentionally walking him with nobody on, that was...
Yeah.
Don't see that very often.
No, that's one of the first times in my lifetime I did. Sure.
Tell me about... excuse me. Now, at the end of the 52 year, the Cardinals released you.
Well, at the end of the 52 season, I was a 10-year man, and I could buy my release for a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought my release, and I think that Pittsburgh wanted me, but I decided to go with Marty Marion, was going to manage the Browns.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to get into coaching. So I agreed to go over there and coach the first year and pitch. And the second year was coaching only.
Mm-hmm.
Well, during the season, in the latter part in the fall, the Browns were sold to Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
So the word my contract was, they couldn't terminate it unless they paid me. So I went to Baltimore and stayed 14 years up there in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have, if I'd known what they do nowadays, I could have probably pitched another 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't expect you to win some, and I couldn't stand to lose.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't stand to lose. I wanted to win all. And nowadays, if you pitch three innings or two innings to get them a certain place, they call them long, shorts, medium, whatever you want to call them. But I could have done that. Richard wanted me to pitch in Baltimore, and I said, Paul, it's too much. And I agreed to coach, and that's it. So I never did do it.
Two things about 1953. First of all, tell me about Bobo Holloman's no-hitter.
Well, Bobo he was pitching that night, and he got in a little problem out there on the mound. And Marty went out there, and I said, Bo, you're doing great now. Just relax and throw it. He said, well, I'm just so nervous, I just can't be still. I said, well, just concentrate on the catcher and throw the ball over the plate, and that's all that counts. He went ahead and pitched. He's something else.
How about Bill Veeck? What do you remember about him?
He's a wonderful guy to work for.
Mm-hmm.
He's great to work for. I never worked for anyone any better. And he would be up the next morning after the game, whether he won or lost. He'd be up at 6 o'clock in the lobby waiting and visit. We went out to dinner a lot, and I just enjoyed working for him. And he He was great. He paid you, and that's what counted, you know. Mm-hmm. But he was really a nice man to work for.
Now, you pitched your whole career, at least the home games, all of them were in Sportsman's Park.
Yeah.
Now, tell me about pitching there. You liked to pitch there, you didn't like to pitch there, and then pick out a couple more. Maybe there was some place that you pitched and you had your best luck, and maybe there was a place like Forbes Field where you didn't like pitching because it was so tiny or something.
Well, actually, I pitched in St. Louis. You just had a short porch out there in right field, high screen, but it was a good place to pitch in. The fast infield was quite fast, and which like they do nowadays, they have all the infields nowadays like concrete around home plate to bounce the ball over the infielders. You know, they used to at one time and wet that down and kept it soft,
mm-hmm.
and they would do that if you had good pitching, they did that, or sinker ball pitchers to get a lot of ground ball. But I've had good luck. I pitched good in Wrigley Field. It's mm-hmm. it's a small porch, and I pitched good in there. I pitched pretty good in any of the parts.
Mm-hmm.
Ebbets Field was, I think, it was the toughest part to pitch in because it wasn't that big a part. And when you got the club that the Dodgers had back there, they were tough. They had real good hitters.
Mm-hmm.
And they were tough. The old polo grounds was real short down the line. You could just make a good pitch on the guy and he'd slice the ball in the opposite field and be home run. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of tough.
How about, are there any umpires that you remember? Did you have any umpires that squeezed you on any, or is there somebody that you thought was your buddy out there? Or?
No, my favorite umpire. Well, I had two. Jocko Collin.
Mm-hmm.
I'd get after him a little bit, and he'd charge me, but he was good. He didn't give you anything. He didn't take anything away from me. And Al Barlick. Al Barlick, I was with him in the minor leagues, and we used to walk around and talk after the ball game, and we become good friends. But my favorite was little Jocko. He wasn't big. He's like myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, we just got along real good.
How about, you ever get thrown out of a game?
Never.
Never?
Never throw down a ball.
And how about, is there any... Something that happens, the strategy is different nowadays, I think, than it was back then. Tell me about any brouhaha, any fight that might have come up. You know, now guys get thrown, they get pitched inside either because they hit a home run the last time up or the guy right in front of them hit a home run. Back then, I guess it was expected. Now, if they do it now, they just want to run out and they want to, it's like big-time wrestling.
Well, that's something that they should change. I think now they have it set up where if you've got to pitch inside or you're not going to win. You can't stay away all nine innings because they get you. So if you come close, the umpire warns you, and the next one, you're automatically out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Back used to, they didn't throw you out of the game pitching inside or hitting a guy. Then your catcher had to protect you, or if you didn't have any protection, it was a fight too, you know. Your mm-hmm. catcher never let the guy get to the pitcher mound. So we always had Walker Cooper or some big guy like that. And he made a lot of difference because he was about 220 and he was a big man.
Mm-hmm. He made more of a difference than Joe did, huh?
That's right.
How about traveling? Tell me about traveling. You know, the trains and the different ways that you travel. And then tell me about the effect on you and your wife and your family.
Well, actually, that's all we had in the minor leagues was bus or train. And when we got to the big leagues, it's all train. And your train rides are, back then, there wasn't too much air conditioning. A little fan in there at night and finally got air conditioned. But you get on St. Louis, it's 22 hours to New York. So you ride all night and get in there just in time to grab a sandwich and go to the park and play. And when you get out, and when it was real hot, say around 100 or something like that, mm-hmm. then the heat would affect you some from it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was tougher then because you spent so much time. Now you can get on a plane, in 2 or 3 hours or 4 hours, you're there, and you get more rest because you're in the hotel, and you can go to bed if you like or do what you want to.
Mm-hmm.
But then you spend it on train on time. So I think your traveling conditions are a lot better, and it's all on, and everything is on the is up to play. The only time in Baltimore we had a bus ride was from Washington. We go to Washington to play mm-hmm. when the old senators over there,
mm-hmm.
and it was just an hour's ride. You know, it wasn't a problem at all, but nowadays it's all plane, you know. I mean, which if you don't like a plane, it's just tough news, because you can't play nowadays.
It was difficult for you to be away from home. Every time I ask this question, that's what I keep hearing. It was tough being away for.
Well,
a
yeah,
time.
You know, we used to have 2 weeks road trip or longer,
mm-hmm.
and you had to get your clothes laundered, you had to get your suits cleaned, and all that. And it was just tough leaving your wife and family at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only bad problem about that.
Okay. Uh-huh.